Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
We'll get into the sports stuff and what the governor had to say about sports with no fans in a couple minutes, and Michael Jordan. And the documentary starts on Sunday of this week, which I'm looking forward to. We have a decent sports week coming up. We have The Last Dance, 2 hours of that on Sunday, and then we lead that up to the draft on Thursday and Friday and Saturday, and then The Last Dance again next Sunday. But before we get into all the good sports stuff, let's say good morning to the guys and say good morning to one Chris Canty. Good morning, Chris.
What's up, Dave? How are you doing this morning?
I'm okay. I felt like yesterday I was a little bit down. Today I feel like I'm in a little bit better state of mind.
Okay. So you've gotten past hump day now that we're on the back half of the week.
I think so.
You feel like you're okay.
We're a week out from the draft. I feel like, you know, it's chilly outside, but it's sunny outside, which is always helpful. So I feel like I'm in a pretty good state of mind. And Rick, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, Dave. I had a really nice night of sleep. I found a new show I'll tell you guys about later. Some of you guys can maybe dabble in a little bit on Netflix. And no, just trying to get through this week. Looking forward to The Last Dance on Sunday. Going to have to change my schedule a little bit because I can't wait to see it. So I'm going to actually stay up and try to watch as much as I can.
Now, isn't it over by 10 or no?
No, it's 2. It's 8. I believe
it's 9 to 11 or 8 to 10?
No, it starts at 9 and it's so 1 and 2. So I believe it's
9 to 11.
It's gonna be,
okay.
Yeah, 9 to 11.
So that's so 11 o'clock is well past when you would normally stay up till.
Yeah, you're looking at like close to 3. I mean, usually you shut it down around 8, 8:30. So I'll battle through.
That was the kind of show, because I have not, you know, we watched Survivor last night and Alex likes to watch American Idol, but I really think I'm going to make Sunday night family appointment viewing. Like, I think we should watch this show as a family unit, and I should, for me, my life, and I think a lot of people out there should add the flavor of how they dealt with, because I don't, this is not going to be a New York centric show of the pain of what you had to deal with Michael Jordan. So I'm going to watch it with the boys, with Sherry, and I'm going to interject my own personal opinions as we watch the show on Sunday.
And you should. I mean, your kids are going to get a chance to witness some history. Kind of they didn't get a chance to see Michael Jordan.
No.
They're big basketball fans, so I'm sure they've seen LeBron, and we sit here on the radio. I mean, if we have nothing to talk about, you know, who's greater, Michael Jordan or LeBron James? Carry that for 3 hours. So just remind you know, the younger viewer how great Michael Jordan was.
But I think, Rick, it also gives people an opportunity to go behind the scenes, people that didn't see Jordan play live and understand what it's all about. I mean, when LeBron James said he was talking about chasing ghosts and trying to win as many championships as Jordan and be looked at on that same level, I think now it'll give the younger basketball fans an opportunity to see exactly why everybody looked at Jordan as the standard. Like, one of the promos that's running on our station about The Last Dance is Phil Jackson talking about Jordan setting this standard that everybody wants to look up to now. I think for younger basketball fans, this will be an opportunity to go behind the scenes and see exactly what made Michael Jordan and the 98 Bulls so special.
Well, what's amazing, though, too, is, I mean, you get a chance right now. I mean, you know, growing up, I mean, I couldn't wait to get my first pair of Jordans. Like, I loved Michael Jordan. I think, you know, Be Like Mike was an unbelievable campaign. But, I mean, you're sitting here witnessing greatness, too, with LeBron James. And I was looking at the top 10 dynasties, you know, and going through that in my head. And I couldn't help but, you know, think to myself, why is LeBron James by himself? I know it's a team thing, but, I mean, LeBron James with this 8 straight NBA finals. Do you know how ridiculous that is?
It's ridiculous.
Well, it's insane. 8 straight finals.
You could easily argue that Jordan would have gone to 8 straight NBA finals and maybe won 8 consecutive championships if he didn't decide to play baseball.
Yeah, but he didn't.
Right. You're right.
The reality is he didn't. So, I mean, I get what you're saying, but I think, I mean, the point in saying all that is that if someone, you know, grew up just loving LeBron James and following LeBron James from the time he was in high school to now in his 17th year, you know, leading the league in assists, poised to win another championship, right? You're saying to yourself, how could it get any better than LeBron James? How could you sit here and make a legitimate argument that there's anyone better than LeBron James? I think this is a good way now for, you know, people like that to really truly understand why, when you start having that conversation, the people that got a chance to watch Michael Jordan make the argument that there's no one close to being as good as Michael Jordan is.
Yeah, I think it's a fair argument. And he's one of the, cause sometimes athletes don't stand the test of time. You know what I mean? Like you get 20, 25 years out and all of a sudden they were great, but this guy's better. Or this guy's not as great. Like he has stood the test of time probably better than any athlete I can ever remember. You know, we're such a prisoner of recency and the moment, and he's not the moment. And we still, Chris, discuss him with this reverence and adoration that is really almost unmatched in all of sports. Cause you can go back and you can look at other greats and you're like, yeah, Magic was great, but you know, he didn't do this great and he didn't do that great and he lost in the finals. He did this. It feels like there's none of that with Michael Jordan.
Well, there's none of that with Jordan because you saw the postseason success that Jordan had once he got past those 80s Pistons. I mean, it was championship after championship after championship. And the only time where you weren't talking about Michael Jordan being in the NBA Finals is the 2 years that he walked away from the game and he went and played baseball and then he came back. And I think that first year they didn't get there. But I mean, listen, we're talking about a guy whose competitive greatness is unmatched. Being at his best when his best was required, and he made his legacy and built his brand by his performance when it mattered the most. And it's a brand that has stood the test of time, Dave. You talk about Michael Jordan not going away and having staying power even past his playing days. It's because everybody recognizes the iconic Jordan brand. Now, it helps that he's also an NBA owner, and he's still around basketball, but it's the brand that has allowed him to have this staying power that we're talking about. And you got to think about it, Dave. You really didn't have an athlete that branded themselves as successfully as Michael Jordan at that point. I mean, when you start talking about the late 80s and 90s, as far as sports brands go from an individual player standpoint, there was no one bigger.
No. No, I don't even think there was anybody close. And, Rick, you're a good person to ask because – as great as Gretzky was, and he was, and as dominant, and the numbers, and the wins, and all those things ring true, it feels like, and maybe I'm wrong, but it feels like Michael Jordan is considered in even a higher class than Wayne Gretzky when you look back at 99.
Well, I think when you look at the sports, too. I mean, I think if you ask someone in Canada that same question, I mean, there's a reason why Wayne Gretzky's nicknamed the Great One. I mean, what he was able to do is, I mean, just look at his numbers.
They're unbelievable.
You can't even believe it. I mean, this guy's getting 200 points a season, which is insane. Scored 92 in a season. I mean, it's ridiculous. So I just think with Michael Jordan, kind of to speak to Chris's point, I mean, he transcended sports. And, you know, the reason why his brand has stood the test of time is because what it stands for. I mean, Michael Jordan now is synonymous with greatness. So, I mean, if you're a great athlete, I mean, look at the athletes that wear Jordan brand or that are Jordan athletes. Derek Jeter. I mean, now you got Zion. I mean, his brand is more than being an athlete. It's an iconic brand. And if you're lucky enough to be a Jordan athlete, you know, he's recognizing you as, you know, you having the same competitive greatness and also kind of being more than just the sport. Like what you stand for is more than just, like what Michael Jordan is and what his brand is more than just basketball. It is. I mean, it's that, you know, that kind of what we talked about with Kobe, leaving behind the mama mentality. I mean, it's, you want to be like Mike. You want to be, I mean, that's greatness. You want to be, you know, in the biggest moment, you know, there's a reason why. You know, one of the arguments for Jordan is he's 6 for 6 in the finals, and they're not even close. I mean, he never.
And he didn't let a game get to game seven.
Yeah.
Didn't let a finals get to game seven.
We all want to believe. I mean, deep down in your heart, you want to believe you have that kind of mentality. You know what I mean? Like, in those moments when your best is required, that you can answer the bell. And that's exactly what he used to do.
Now, I wonder in New York if people are going to have a tougher time with this show. Because, and I've told you this in the past, like, I detested Michael Jordan. And I'm not saying I didn't recognize his greatness, because I always did. But, I mean, from the time I was 9, it's almost like his entire being as a basketball player was solely to torture me. Really. Because I'm 9, I'm a Georgetown fan. He hits the shot in the corner to beat the Hoyas 63-62. Then he goes to the Bulls. Now, remember, they were not great right away. It took them a couple of years to get to that level and then push over the top. But then every year, it's we beat the Knicks, we beat the Knicks, we beat the Knicks. It's like, he tortured me so much. So I do wonder, Chris, if the New York viewers starting on Sunday night, I have to figure the rating is going to be unbelievable, do have a tougher time watching and maybe even enjoying this show than other fans around the country.
Well, I mean, it's going to force Knicks fans to relive some of the nightmares that Michael Jordan and those Bulls teams are responsible for. But Dave, even though you hate Michael Jordan, you have to respect him.
Yeah, but that's two different things.
Yeah, I understand it's two different things, but because you respect him, I think it does provide some entertainment value. It will be an enjoyable watch just from the standpoint of you get to actually see behind the curtain as to what made him tick and what made those 90s Bulls teams go. So, yeah, I think people in New York will be locked and loaded to watch it on Sunday night. I don't think that the fact that he was the guy that was responsible for none of their teams actually having a chance to win a championship, I don't think that will keep people from getting in front of the television to check it out.
Yeah, what makes it worse too, Dave, for us as Knicks fans, is, you know, the teams that we love as Knicks fans, you're sitting here and it seems like every day you pick up the newspaper or, you know, read an article, whatever it is, you get sound on, you know, a sports talk radio show, whatever it is. It's just, you know, the players just systematically destroying those teams that we loved. Oh, Patrick Ewing was he wasn't a real leader. He was all about himself. It's like, come on, man. Like, we need to do that. We need to do that now.
Patrick Ewing was the hardest working player I've ever seen. And this premise that he wasn't a great player and didn't will his team is just, he couldn't get by Michael Jordan and he couldn't get by Hakeem Olajuwon. But I mean, let's be fair. When you look at Ewing and the talent that was on those teams, as tough as they were, as good as Anthony Mason was and Charles Oakley and Derek Harper and Doc Rivers, he never played with a Scottie Pippen. He never had anybody even close to what Michael Jordan had there. And I'm not saying that Ewing is Michael Jordan by any stretch, but Patrick Ewing never had that second guy, Rick, never even close to what Michael had.
No, you're right, and it's sad. I mean, I there's no reason for it. I mean, you know, Chris keeps going back to the fact, and this is why I know as a sports fan you love this kind of stuff, is, I mean, you want to see what the secret sauce was. You want to see behind the scenes how they made it work. I mean, the fact that Michael Jordan saying it was a trying season, you're like, well, you know, watching it when it happened, you're like, I mean, this team is unbelievable. I mean, this team's going to win a championship. And then you find out there was a lot of trials and tribulations that went along with it. I just think it's sad, man, because, I mean, looking at what Patrick Ewing was able to do and what those teams were able to do, I mean, I get it. They didn't win the ultimate prize, but still, I mean, to now, you know, decide that you want to go after your teammates, that's sad to me, man. I mean, the sanctity of the locker room, man, it's just like some things are better left. Just let them be. Just leave them be.
Yeah, you wish that stuff wouldn't come out. But, I mean, with every team, even championship teams, there's always going to be some friction between players in the locker room. But when you win, a lot of that stuff get swept under the rug, you keep it behind closed doors, and when you lose, people want to point to that being the reason why you lost. But, I mean, Dave, as far as number one overall picks go, I mean, Patrick Ewing lived up to the billing. I don't understand why you know, Charles Oakley would be coming for his neck. I mean, in terms of being able to transform the state of the franchise, Patrick Ewing did that.
The Knicks were what they are now when he went there. I mean, they were the laughing stock of the NBA. They were a nothing short of a joke, and Patrick Ewing, you know, completely transformed that team. Did he transform them the way Isaiah Thomas did with the Pistons? No. Did he transform them the way?
Well, you're saying that because he didn't win the championship. That's really what it comes down to, right?
Yeah, right.
But I mean, they got to an NBA Finals. They didn't finish the drill.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you're right. But that's what it's all about, right? Isn't that what we're all about in sports, especially now, is did you win a championship? I mean, Ernie Banks, who was considered one of the great players of all time, never led his team anywhere in Major League Baseball. And he's considered possibly one of the greatest shortstops in the history of baseball. So I just think that times change. But nowadays, when you look at it and you look back at Patrick Ewing, I don't know. I think of him as having a storied career. To have the negativity draped down on him now, I think is really unfortunate.
Yeah, it doesn't seem fair, Dave. But to go to the playoffs, what, 14 straight years?
Yeah.
14 straight?
And he was a great player. I mean, when you just looked at what he was, the litmus test of you watched him play, he was a great player. He was a terrific scorer. He didn't have much of an offensive game coming into the NBA. He developed an outside shot. He was an excellent rebounder. He was always a great defensive player. Like, he was a great, great player. Was he Michael Jordan? No. But, you know, we start out by saying, who has been? I don't think we have seen Michael Jordan. If Michael Jordan never played in the NBA or played in a different era, Rick, I would guarantee you that Patrick Ewing would have championships.
And you're probably right. But, I mean, you know, I mean, this is, This is you to a T, though, Dave. I mean, how much you love winning. I mean, for you, it's winning above all, right? Like, it take all that other stuff, throw it out the window. You're all about winning and winning championships and then getting naked after you win. But, I mean, you know what winning does. I mean, you know, we as a society, I mean, we romanticize winning. It makes everything better. You overlook so many different things. I mean, why is Tom Brady the greatest of all time now?
Because he has more wins than anybody.
Exactly right.
He's won more Super Bowls.
Yeah, I mean, so that's really what it comes down to, is Patrick didn't win, and now all of a sudden they want to, you know, because of what happened at the Garden with Charles Oakley and everything else, I mean, he's going scorched earth, and it's not fair to Patrick Ewing, it isn't.
It's really not, because he's never done anything but been a good soldier, Chris. It really bothers me the way that Patrick Ewing has been treated, because he never had that number two guy. He did everything he could. He never complained about things. He tried to carry that team on his back year after year after year. He was a great player. And now, minding his own business, coaching Georgetown, you have to go after him? I think it's really Bush League by Oakley.
Yeah, and it was a low blow by Oakley, saying that's why the Knicks wouldn't give him a job, too. When we know the Knicks have hired so many other former greats, like to not have Patrick Ewing over there at the Garden, it does seem a little strange. But listen, Ewing has gone on with his coach's career. He's down at Georgetown. He's doing his thing. I mean, it just seems like it was unnecessary for Charles Oakley to do that. You want to go after James Dolan? Fine. I get it. Now, people are always going to be critical of an owner when you have a perennial loser. But, I mean, going after one of the all-time Knick greats, to me, it just seems like it was something that was out of bounds. Like, it's not something that you do. I mean, you can say what you want about Patrick Ewing. The guy gave you a shot. He got the two NBA finals. Now, I mean, you start talking about wanting a team to be a championship contender. He gave you an opportunity to get to that stage. And so I think that's why a lot of Knicks fans love Patrick. But, I mean, the grit that Charles Oakley brought to the game, we love that too. But, I mean, for Oakley, what he's doing right now is just kind of one of those things where he's desperate for attention. And that's what makes it hard for me to even acknowledge anything the dude is saying, because it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't like it.
I don't think anybody likes it. I don't know how you could possibly like it, Rick. I don't know.
No, you couldn't. I mean, again, I mean, there are some things that are better left, you know, unsaid. I mean, I guess if you want to go back, and then we all do this as players. I mean, Chris was lucky enough to win a championship. I mean, the whole reason you play is to win a championship. And if you're on the cusp, you know, maybe now in retirement, you know, years removed, you start to go through, you know, the different seasons in your head and, you know, why we couldn't get over the hump. But yeah, I mean, keep that to yourself. I mean, this is not the time. Like, let's not pretend like the Knicks gave Patrick Ewing was dying to be a head coach in the NBA. The Knicks didn't just say, hey, Patrick, you know what? Because you're one of the greatest players that ever played for New York, we're going to give you a head coach. No, they didn't give him a job either. So, I mean, to take shots at Patrick Ewing right now is, I mean, completely out of bounds, in my opinion.
Completely out of bounds. All right, people lined up. Want to talk about the Bulls and the Knicks and how it combines. 800-919-3776. We'll hear from Michael Jordan, who's on Good Morning America earlier today. We'll take a listen to that as well. Let's go to Train in the Truck to lead us off on a Thursday. Good morning, Train.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hope everybody's safe. Dave and Chris, I don't know how you guys deal with Rick. He is so crazy. I just wanted to say I'm 31. I'm 31 years old, and I didn't really get to see Jordan. I really started watching with Kobe back-to-back, and that's what made me a Lakers fan and things like that. But I just had a question. From the championships I've seen, from the players I've watched, in the sport I've watched, how much was it Jordan? Because I got older guys always telling me he didn't win until he got a great team and things, and I'm not attesting to that. I want to know from you guys, really, like, how much, what's the percentage was it Jordan? You know what I mean? Like, was it really he carried everybody on his back like that? So I just want to hear from you guys. Thanks.
No, I don't think he carried everybody on his back, and thanks for the call. I mean, he was clearly the alpha dog of that team, and he was a sensational player, and there was nothing he couldn't do. But remember, Chris, they couldn't win anything until Scottie Pippen joined that team. So, no, I mean, Horace Grant was on the first incarnation, then you had Dennis Rodman. So, I mean, without Michael, you would have done nothing, but I can't say that Michael Jordan was the only reason they won championships. I don't think that's fair.
No, that's not fair, but he did set the tone for the team.
And he was the best player. I'm not arguing that even a little bit, yeah.
No, he established that mentality that, you know, winning is the most important thing. I don't care about being your friend. I don't care about being liked. I care about winning because that's going to lead to respect. And Jordan was clearly out to be one of the greatest to ever do it, and he accomplished his goal. So, I mean, how often does a player set out to be the best at whatever he does and then ultimately end up doing it? Like, I guess that's kind of when we start looking at Jordan. Like, this is a guy that, you know, when he was at Carolina, everybody thought he was a good player, but nobody had any idea that he was capable of doing what he did once he got to the Bulls. So, I mean, the fact that you saw that growth in his game and you saw the swagger and the confidence, I think that's what attracted so many fans to Jordan. And then once he got to the biggest stage the game had to offer, he had some of his most iconic performances. So I think that's really the thing that separates Jordan from everybody else, Dave.
Yeah, he had this. Go ahead, Rick.
No, and he's got the iconic moments too. I mean, that stay with you forever, right? I mean,
he's got everything.
Go back into your. He does have.
He does nothing he doesn't have. I mean, he's a good-looking guy, right? He was a great player. He had an insatiable desire to win. He could do things that no one else could do, or he could just go, you know, sleepless for nights and still put 45 in your grill. He was a great defensive player. He says he doesn't think he's going to come across great in this documentary because he has this insatiable desire to win. But when I honestly, Rick, is there anything that when you ever watched him that he was incapable of doing?
No, there wasn't. No, there absolutely wasn't. And I mean, Chris said it best. I mean, he set the standard, and it's a team sport. Let's not forget that. I mean, you talk about, you know, these great teams. It's not just about one player. As great as Kobe was, it was Kobe and Shaq, and then it was Kobe and, you know, Paul Gasol. It takes more than one person in a team sport to win a championship. I think what you'll see is, and, you know, Chris and I always talk about this, is, you know, a lot of the time your best leaders aren't your best players. Like, that's very rare to have your best player be, you know, be the voice in the locker and be the tone setter, be the leader. But I think that's why Michael Jordan in his mind won't come off great, is because in order to be a great leader, you're not concerned about being everyone else's friend. Like, if you need to, like, if you don't feel like Steve Kerr's playing great defense and he could be a liability in your chances to win a championship, then you're going to punch him in the face. And that's exactly what he did. No, but that's exactly what he did. Like, the greatest leaders that I've ever met garnered the most respect, but weren't concerned about hurting your feelings. They knew that you respected them enough that they could hold you accountable. They may not like it, but they were going to do it. If you chose to be, you know, all up in your feelings and, you know, now all of a sudden you don't want to be my friend, I could care less. I'm not about being your friend. I'm about winning games and winning championships. And
I think it's almost like what a good parent does, right? Like, I'm not interested in being your pal. I mean, I'd like to be. That would be ideal, but that's not my number one priority. My number one priority is turning you into a good person and being your parent. And it feels like it was similar to what he did. My number one and sole priority is to go out there and win. So if it means that my teammates don't love me, okay. If it means that I'm not portrayed great in a documentary 20 plus years later, then so be it. But I am going to win championships.
And that's why I disagree with what Jordan said in terms of him coming off in a negative light based on this docuseries, because I don't think it'll be that. Dave, I think we live in an era where authenticity and being unapologetically you is the ultimate currency. And I think a lot of people will see that with Jordan because his priority was basketball above all else. I mean, it's one of those things where you say it might be a little unhealthy, but to him, that was the most important thing. And he wasn't willing to compromise. So when you have somebody that's that committed, that's that dedicated to one thing, and then you actually see them break through and accomplish their goal, I mean, that's the thing that's special. I mean, very few athletes have an opportunity to even come close to experiencing anything like that. To set out to be the best at what you do, and then after you get done playing, that's what everybody considers you? You're at the top of the pyramid when it comes to your respective sport, your respective craft?
That's where he is.
I mean, how many people can say that?
I mean, Brady, Gretzky, not a lot. Not a lot.
No, but it's the ultimate sign of respect. You know, like even listening to what Shaq said, I mean, Shaq's one of the most dominant NBA players that we've ever seen. And he was like, you know, when I first met Michael Jordan, when I first, you know, got a chance to play against Michael Jordan, he's like, it was like playing against the God. Like I had built him up so much in my mind that it was like, you know, I'm playing against, you know, someone that's not human. I mean, that's what Michael Jordan became, man. He was more than just a basketball player.
He really, let's take a listen to it.
And he still is.
Which is amazing to me because nobody is larger than life after they retire 20 years. They're just not. And he is.
But because he left behind the brand, man. I mean, Canty's the same as me. I mean, the second a new Jordan sneaker comes out, I'm trying to buy it. I mean, I waited in line for 2 hours to get Allen Hahn a pair of Jordan.
Sidebar, Rico, what's your favorite Jordan?
Oh, man, don't put me in that situation.
I got to, man. I got to ask, man. What's the favorite? You brought it up.
Oh, God. I don't even know, dude. I have my whole closet. I mean, you name it. It just depends on what color I'm wearing. God.
For me, it's the Jordan 11. The Jordan 11, the patent leather joints. That was, when they came out with those, I was in middle school. That was the wave, man. You know the ones I'm talking about? The white with the black patent leather at the bottom?
I know exactly what you're talking about, dude. I remember how pumped I was. I kept asking my parents, I'm like, Mom, Dad, please, all I want is Jordans. And I finally got my first pair of Jordans. And I mean, just all of a sudden putting them on your feet, like just the pep in you, like I was just strutting around. I was in, what was it, third or fourth grade, just strutting around the classroom. Look at these.
This is
God forbid anybody step on them, Rick. God forbid.
No, you can't do it. No, it's a fight.
We're on site.
I actually made my parents give me, like I said, Mom, listen, I'm going to wear them to school, but there's no chance I'm wearing these out to recess. So I would take off the Jordans before recess and put some other sneakers on just so no one would mess up my Jordans.
You know what? You guys are bringing me back to this awful moment when I was a kid. My parents, and you'll make fun of me and that's fine, and I don't even understand why to this day, demanded that I wear shoes, like not dress shoes, but shoes at least one day a week.
And now you wear sneakers every single day.
I don't put on shoes unless I absolutely have to. Yes, sneakers every single day. It was something about like the arches of your feet are going to not be appropriate if you wear sneakers every day. They made me wear shoes one day a week. I mean, it's cruel.
Yeah, that's not very nice.
It's not very nice.
No, they wanted you to look presentable, you know, make sure you didn't have any flat foot issues.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I'll tell you, this whole thing is going to be too much for me. This whole Jordan love affair, how great he was.
You're going to be fine, Dave.
I guarantee you, I'm not the only person that is sitting here excited / dreading what we're going to witness over the next 5 weeks. Especially here in New York, guys. I guarantee it.
But, Dave, doesn't a small part of you feel excited that, you know, you're going to have some kind of emotion behind watching something sports related? Yeah, I mean, how long has it been since you've had something like that?
It's the worst emotion that I ever have. No, I didn't drink Gatorade for years. I wouldn't wear Hanes underwear. I detested Michael Jordan. I detested him.
I get it, Dave. Maybe it's not a great emotion, but I'm just saying, at least you get to feel something because of sports. It's been over a month since we've been in this quarantine and shelter in place. Like, think about that. We'll actually have something that we can watch that's sports related that's going to have us have some kind of reaction, some type of emotion. I'm looking forward to that.
That I will have emotion from watching sports, I would agree. I would absolutely agree. By the way, I don't know if you guys have seen it yet, the HBO documentary, The Scheme, have you seen that?
I haven't.
Excellent. You know that, right? It's Christian Dawkins, the kid like 3 years ago that was wiretapped by the FBI and it brought down Patino and should have with Sean Miller and Will Wade at LSU. I'm giving it 5 stars. It is excellent. Have you seen it, Rick? Yeah.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Excellent. Have you heard about it? It came out like, I think last week. Excellent. HBO shows are great. Those documentaries, outstanding. Outstanding.
Yeah, I'm finding myself that I'm more and more drawn to documentaries, to like, you know, stuff that's actually really happened.
Yeah. And if you ever need suggestions through the serial killer view of that, I have lots of them.
Guys, what kind of review do you think? What kind of review you think Gordon Damer is going to give the Last Dance docuseries?
It's going to be the complete opposite of what 99% of the people think about it.
Okay.
Well, every review I've read of people that have seen it already say it is absolutely unbelievable. So I would think that Gordon would say it's trite and bland and drones on and on and on.
Right? Poorly done.
Yeah.
Not great character development.
Horrible editing. Bad sound quality. He will. If there's anyone that can find reasons why it's not going to be well done, it would be Gordon Damer.
This tarnishes Jordan's legacy.
Yeah. He's not the same guy that I thought he was. Unlikable would be an understatement. Yes. This, I'm sure Gordon will have many negative things to say. By the way, Gordon Damer can be heard every night right now with Larry Hardesty, 10 o'clock, and his uplifting views on life and sports. With everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases, you can wash your hands, and you should. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, and your mouth. Stay home when you're sick. Cover your cough or your sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN New York. All right, you mentioned, Rick, about Shaquille O'Neal and his, I guess fear, for lack of a better word, when it came to Michael Jordan. And he was on with Ariel Helwani, and he said he was actually terrified of Michael Jordan. Here's Shaq.
I finally revealed that when I first got in the league, I was terrified of Jordan. Because the reason why I was terrified, because as a kid, it was like you're watching a god. Now you're on the same court with God. And all the stuff that he was doing when I was a kid is true. He can fly. He can bump you in the air, still be in the air when you come down, laying up. He's in perfect condition. His jump shot is crazy. If he steals a ball on the break, all the fans are going to stand up and he's going to dunk it. So everything I was seeing when I was a kid was really true. A lot of guys, I was like, oh, you're not, I saw you on TV, but now that I'm here, you're not really that good. But with him, everything you saw as a kid was true. But, you know, once I got over that, then I started to, you know, play a little better. But that team, the one that went 72-10, I knew they was going to win the whole year.
We always knew that they were going to win the whole year. I mean, they won six straight, but really, Chris, it was you know, an 8-year period, because the 2 years that he left, so it was years and years that we saw Michael Jordan win and not even be pushed to the brink in the NBA Finals.
Yeah, I mean, that just shows you how dominant he was once he came into his own. One of the hardest things as an athlete is figuring out what that winning formula is, especially when you get to championship level play. And for Michael Jordan, that's exactly what it was in the late 80s. You know, when he was trying to get past those Pistons teams, but then he finally had the breakthrough. What was that, 90? 89, 90?
The breakthrough was 91.
91. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's really what you're talking about, like to actually see that happen and to see it unfold. Once he figured that out, Dave, I mean, there was no stopping him. I mean, he was just going to continue to do whatever it took to get back to and win championships. And that's why I think so many people, even though you might hate him, You have to really respect him because of his commitment, because of his dedication.
No, I mean, he was going to drag you kicking and screaming. I mean, whatever it took. I mean, he was going to drag you to where he wanted to get, which was to win championships. That was his mentality. I actually was listening now. Did you listen at all this morning to the interview that his former agent, David Falk, had?
No.
Yeah.
He actually told a pretty funny story. So there was I forget the kid's name, but, you know, there was a kid that they ended up bringing in, and he was a rookie, and he got to the practice facility, and this was like an hour before you were supposed to be there, and Jordan was already there, already full sweat. So next day he goes an hour and a half early. Again, Jordan there, full sweat. Next time he decides, you know what, I'm just going to, so ridiculous, there's no chance he's going to be there. So he shows up at some ungodly hour. He beats Jordan. Following day, same exact thing, figuring he's going to beat Jordan. Jordan's already there, and he's got coffee and donuts waiting for him.
It's great.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, it's hard. What's the old quote? It's hard to beat someone that never will quit, right, or won't be outworked. I mean, it's true. As even if you're not a great athlete, if you're willing to outwork everybody, and your mindset is, I'm you're not going to get rid of me. It's hard to stop people like that.
Yeah, and that doesn't usually, I mean, that very rarely do you have it line up where a guy as talented as Michael Jordan is as driven
right.
as Michael Jordan was.
Right. I mean, Kobe Bryant was that guy.
Yeah, but I mean, isn't it what boggles your mind about what Tom Brady's doing right now at his age?
Like, yes.
What else do you need to do?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's hard to wrap your mind around.
I feel the same way about Belichick, to be honest with you. Like, I because knowing the way I am, and then that's all I could do is compare it to me, but I know that if I had that kind of unbelievable success in anything, at some point, I'd start to let it go a little bit. Like, I wouldn't be able to do the, you know, 20 hours a day and sleeping on the couch and not seeing my family. And I commend those guys. It's just, they are different. They are the outlier. That is not the normal, typical people do not have that. And that's why they're special.
Yeah, that's why people appreciate him, Dave, is because they don't succumb to human nature. After you've had that kind of success, like Jordan or like Brady or like Belichick, I mean, you would think that, you know, most folks would rest on their laurels. They would appreciate their accomplishments, their accolades, and, you know, they would relax a little bit. But these guys were never satisfied. These individuals, it's something that's in their DNA. Something about their makeup won't let them take a step back. They're always trying to get to the next challenge. And then after you accomplish something, get to the next challenge. It's this drive that most people can't comprehend. And mm-hmm. I think that because we don't understand it, I think that's a part of the lore when you start talking about, you know, somebody's individual greatness.
Did you, Rick, ever play with anybody who was like that, who just was just the sheer will combined with talent made them that?
With the Islanders?
No, just at all.
Just in general? Some of the guys that, you know, I grew up idolizing. I mean, I think, you know, Chris Chelios was like that. I mean, he was always, and he liked to have a good time. But, I mean, that never stood in the way of him being, you know, first one at the rink, hardest worker, you know, best player on the ice, always in the best shape. Like, that's who he was. And that's why he played as long as he played and was as successful as he was. Because he wouldn't be denied. And then there were great players, like, I mean, that were super talented and that were Hall of Fame players that didn't necessarily care about being the hardest worker. They would show up, they'd be the best player, and that was good enough. Like Brett Hull was like that. Like Brett Hull was, he was just that good. Like it wasn't about, you know, being in the best shape, putting in the most work. It was just, he would show up and he would play and he would be just naturally one of the best players on the ice.
But there's nothing wrong with that, right? Like you didn't look down on Brett Hull because he was a great player. He's an all-time great.
No, he's an all-time great. But I mean, the players that you're talking about, the Jordans, you know, mm-hmm. what I was able to experience with Chris Chelios, like what you're seeing from Tom Brady. I mean, that's not the norm.
No.
I mean, what?
That's the
Kobe
outlier.
Kobe Bryant. Yeah, that's the outlier.
Like, so Chris Chelios would be the guy, if you had to pick one guy that you've seen that was the most similar to Jordan and the work ethic and the desperation to win and you know, win at all costs, it was Chelios?
Well, Chelios, just everything, like all-encompassing with Chelios, how cool he was. Like, he was the coolest guy. You always wanted to hang out with Chris Chelios. Like, Chris Chelios is the guy that would, you know, call you at, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning. What are you doing? Just going to go get breakfast. Nah, put your clothes on. And he'd take you to, you know, an airport, jump on a private plane, and he'd be at, you know, Kid Rock's house, hanging with Kid Rock, going to his concert. Like, that's the circle.
that's
the circle of people. Like, that's like, Chris Chelios is the one who could party all night and then, you know, get in trouble for breaking a windshield. And then you'd show up at the rink hungover, and he'd be on the ice skating the cop that yelled at him because he realized he was Chris Chelios and the guy was a goalie. So Chelios like, oh yeah, come down to the rink. And he's got the guy puking and Chelios just bombing around the rink after being out all night. Like he's like a Greek god, man. He mm-hmm. was chiseled. You get to the locker room, he rides the bike in the sauna. He takes the stationary bike, puts it in the sauna, rides it for 20 minutes, jumps in a cold tub, and then it embarrasses you on the ice.
Yeah,
because you're dragging ass because you've been up.
He's that guy. Yep, Chris. Do you have that guy in the NFL that you played with or against or training camp or anything?
OC Umanyora, who I think is the Mariano Rivera of pass rushers in the NFL. You're not going to find too many pass rushers that have more sacks on third downs and in 2 minute drills than OC Umanyora. But Dave, he was the guy with those Giants team that I was on that set the tone for everybody. Like, he was the first one in the building. He was the one that worked the hardest. Like, he would stay after and watch film. Even if we go out, like, it would be one of those things where, yeah, he could hang out all night, but he was going to make sure that he was in the building early in the morning to get his work in. So for me, it was that guy. And to Rick's point, when you have those kind of guys around, they really enjoy themselves. I mean, OC, he had a good time in New York. I mean, he's a championships, obviously, but I mean, the way that dude worked, I mean, so obsessive about his craft. That was the one thing that I had to respect. And everybody that was a part of that defensive line respected. He was the guy that really set the tone for how we worked.
Yeah, he was a great player, too. He was a great player.
Unbelievable, Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He really
on and off the field.
You know what's nice. Amazing about Jordan, too? Dave, you know what? You know what the one thing that that really always used to impress me about Michael Jordan is, I mean, clearly he's one of the greatest scorers of all time. I mean, what he was able to do with the basketball in his hands. But, I mean, how could you not buy in to, I mean, to him as a teammate or to whatever he would tell you if not only is the guy, you know, leading the league in scoring, he's also, oh, by the way, all defensive first team nine times.
Yeah, no,
are you kidding me?
You can't not. Right? I mean, even if you didn't like him, even if you said, guy's such a jerk and he goes out all night and he whatever your negativity could be, there's nobody you'd want to take the shot more than him. There's nobody you'd want to be a teammate more than him as far as winning is concerned. There's nobody that left it on the court more. Like he, I mean, really, and I hate to say this, was almost like the perfect player. I mean, when you look back at Michael Jordan, guys, is there anything, Rick, that he could not do on the basketball court?
No, and if there was anything during the course of a season that he didn't feel like was at the level it needed to be, it always felt like the next year he'd show up, having worked on it, and it would be way better than it was the year before.
Yeah.
Like, he always was looking to make himself better.
I remember when he came in the NBA, Chris, he was not a great shooter. And you remember him now as, you know, one of the great mid-range shooters in the history of the game, but he was not that guy. He was more of an athletic freak, and you couldn't stop him from getting to the rim. But by the time it was all said and done, that 17-footer or 19-footer was as good from Jordan as it is from anybody we've ever seen.
And the irony of the greatest part of his game being virtually eliminated from today's game, it's interesting how the NBA has changed. But, Dave, I mean, in terms of what he did and how he worked, I mean, you're not going to find anybody that's going to go on the record and say a player exceeded what Michael Jordan did from a work ethic standpoint. Like, you're just not going to hear about it. And to me, that's remarkable, especially for somebody that at the latter stages of his career was as accomplished as him. The fact that he was constantly working on trying to improve, I mean, is just one of those things where he bucked human nature. And you can't figure out how or why, what made him tick. But I'm looking forward to this docuseries because I think we'll get a little more insight into what made Michael Jordan become the player that he was.
Let's go to AJ in Potsdam. AJ, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
I hated Michael Jordan. I really couldn't stand Michael Jordan. I'm a lifelong Knicks fan. I couldn't stand him. He kept beating the Knicks year after year after year. But let me tell you what happened. I ended up respecting him, and I still respect him, but I ended up respecting him when he decided to, when he had to retire in the prime of his career. He retired for the love of his father to go play baseball, to take the chance to go out and play baseball to embarrass himself. And you remember at that time, you know, he was the greatest athlete ever. And he took the chance to go out to go play baseball just because, not just because like it was a bad thing, but, you know, for the love of his father. And he took that chance to go play to embarrass himself. Not that he did embarrass himself, but to take the chance that to go ahead and do that at the height of his career. So when he came back and he was still beating my Knicks, I had more of a respect for him because I knew that player right there, he didn't care about his ego. He was just playing basketball because he was that great at it. He didn't need the hype from everyone. That's why he stopped and went to go play baseball. And I just, from that point
on. Time out for a quick second. I think there's some mystery as to, you know, why he decided to walk away from the NBA when he didn't play. In play baseball and everything surrounding his dad's death and everything else. But, I mean, what he decided to do was the definition of ego, that you feel like you can just leave the NBA and then jump into playing professional baseball. I mean, that's the epitome of having a humongous ego.
I don't know. I disagree. I mean, at that point, I mean, he didn't know if he could play baseball in front of all the cameras at that point after he won three championships. I mean, he left the sport that he knew he was that good in to go play another sport.
Of course he did. Yeah, but of course he did. I mean, you don't just, I mean, again, in, of course you give him credit because he went out and he tried it. But still, I mean, that's the definition of having a humongous ego, that you think you're so athletically gifted that you can all of a sudden stop playing basketball, which you're the greatest of all time playing, and then you can just step in and be a professional baseball player. That's the epitome of having a huge ego.
I don't know about that having a huge ego part. I just think that he was honestly just going through it mentally, and he just had to do it for his father. And the fact, to me, that's the epitome of not having an ego when you're leaving something that you know you're great at. And to go, there's no way he could have thought at that point that he was actually going to succeed playing Major League Baseball.
Well, I don't think he thought he wasn't going to be good, though. That's the thing. I don't think he left basketball thinking that he wasn't going to be very good at baseball. I mean, it probably never even occurred to him that he would end up failing. It probably didn't even occur to him that he couldn't will himself to be a good baseball player when he had willed himself to become arguably the greatest basketball player of all time. You see what I'm saying? Like, just the way that he's wired is different than you and I. This dude is an outlier. You don't find too many people with the kind of mentality that Michael Jordan had.
Exactly. I'm just saying for me as a fan of basketball, and at that time where I didn't like him because he kept beating my Knicks, I just felt like for him to just stop stop what he was doing. He was at that point, he was the best basketball player.
Yeah, no, we get everything. It, AJ. We get it. Thanks for the phone call. And you mentioned it, and I know we tiptoe around or what you do, Rick, but there was a lot of rumblings of why he actually left the NBA back at that time. Remember, his father had just been murdered, and there was just a lot of swirling rumors about what could have potentially been going on. So, I don't know. I don't want to speculate now, but that certainly was always a question for a lot of people.
Dave, here's the other thing, and I appreciate what he's saying. I mean, you know, as a Jets fan, you can't stand, you know, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, but you respect the hell out of them for what they've been able to accomplish. I mean, that's what it comes down to. You have the ultimate respect for, you know, their greatness. But, I mean, to make the argument that Michael Jordan didn't have an ego, did you listen to his Hall of Fame speech?
Yeah. I mean, it was basically – I mean, he already had one.
He ran down the list, didn't he, Dave?
I mean, he already – no one would ever say that Jordan wasn't the pinnacle, the top, the best. And he had to go out there and just lambaste everyone when we already knew. If there's anybody we've ever known, it's him. And he had to go out there and do that. I think it's a great point. I want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere you go. Just click listen live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play ESPN New York at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go. All right, Rick, are you ready for your question from Andy in Merrick? Are you ready?
I'm actually looking forward to it, yeah.
Okay, Chris, you're also ready as well?
I'm ready, Dave.
All right, let's go. Andy and Merrick, you, my friend, are on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, guys. I got to be better today than I was yesterday, that's for sure. All right, Chris. University of Virginia has had 3 first-round draft picks by the New York Jets. Can you name those 3 first-round draft picks?
Okay, the Brickashaw Ferguson is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Let me see here. First round draft. All right. James Farrier?
That's 2.
Nice.
Okay.
One more to go.
Andy, can you tell me what side of the ball?
Defensive lineman.
John Harris.
No. Dave, Rick, you want to help him out?
I don't know that I know the answer.
Controversial pick in 89.
Jeff Lagerman.
That's
Lagerman. Combine.
By the way, that was not controversial. Yeah. It was a terrible selection. No controversy there.
No controversy, Dave?
Do you think he was awful?
All right, Rick.
All right.
ESPN Radio's own Marty Lyons. The only Jet to have 2 safeties in his career. He was also a first-round pick in 1979. Do you know what college he went to?
What college did Marty Lyons? Marty Lyons actually is. Canty, you weren't at the. Canty, were you at the softball game with Marty Lyons?
No. He took one of the terrible fall. Bad spill.
No, that was. I mean, I don't even know. You're underselling terrible. That was.
I said terrible.
That was. It was amazing. Marty Lyons. He went to. I think Marty Lyons went to Alabama.
Roll Tide. You got it.
Yeah, baby.
Nicely right, done, Dave. Rico.
He's tough as nails, too. By the way, I have more respect now for Marty Lyons after that fall and battling through it than I would have ever had watching him play football.
I was bleeding all over the place after the fall.
Dude, he was gushing blood everywhere.
Yeah, no, that was tough. That was more memorable from that softball game.
Also,
great guy, by the way. More memorable from that softball game. Marty Lyons and just the toughness that he displays, Rick, or the just travesty of Ray Santiago at the plate.
Well, I was going to say how proud I was of you in the game. The game you brought forth was tremendous.
Two for
Santiago,
two.
I mean, yeah, you were unbelievable. Your kids couldn't believe it. But I mean, Santiago, it's amazing. He can't make contact with a softball. Can't hit it.
No, it's unbelievable. I think Ray, correct me if I'm wrong. Did you strike out three times on nine pitches?
I can't remember, to be honest with you.
But it was like, it wasn't far off from that, right?
It's probably in the ballpark.
Yeah. All right. All right, Andy, what do you got?
All right. New York Giants draft question, of course, for you, David. O'Shane Zimenez, a third rounder last year. By the way, the only NFL player ever to have a last name beginning with the letter X. What college was he drafted out of?
Old Dominion.
You got that. That was too easy.
Yeah, that was a nice easy one. That was a nice. All right, so look
healthy,
at that.
We
went 3 for 3. Perfect. The perfect day. All right. Good job. Good job, Andy, as well. I enjoy this little Andy staple on the show. I think it's fun.
Yeah, outside of the one day where his questions were horrendous. I mean, he can't beat himself up, though, with you. I mean, the fact is, any Giants-related question, unless it's the most obscure person or draft pick, you're going to get it.
Yes,
it's
right into the wheelhouse there.
Yeah, I mean, if we're staying Giants draft related questions, more often than not, I mean, you're going to hit it probably, I would say, close to 95% of the time. You're going to be.
Right. I would agree with that. Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I used to actually. We'll take a break in a second. I used to literally study, like, you know, the way people study for tests. I used to study Giants history. Study it.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me
one bit. Go through the media guide and like, you know, like 2-a-days. Like, all right. 85 first round pick. What'd they do? George Adams. All right. 33. Kentucky. This, you know, all of it. All of it. Used to study it.
Well, yeah. I mean, where you lack, I mean, the part of your brain that is just as far as, you know, social interaction is concerned, which is clearly, I mean, there's something wrong with you. It's that now has been filled with all this Giants information.
I have droves of useless knowledge. You find me to be socially unacceptable, by the way?
No, not unacceptable. You would admit you're a little bit socially awkward.
I don't know that that's true.
That's 100% stop, please.
That's
I love you, but it's true.
Yeah.
Socially awkward?
And you enjoy making other people awkward.
Well, that's true. But I don't know that I'm socially awkward.
Dave, really? Really? Right. I mean, you left your future wife at the dinner table and went and watched a basketball game. That was
the national championship football game, Miami and
so, Dave, explain to me how you cannot be socially awkward, but you enjoy making other people awkward.
I don't know.
I'm trying to wrap my arms around that one.
I don't know. Maybe okay. Maybe I'm just the mess, and I'm in such denial that I don't.
This is a little bit different, Dave, but that's why.
Not arguing that.
Yeah, we love you for that.
But if you met me in a social setting, like you were at a bar and you met me, like immediately, like, oh God, this guy's socially awkward. I don't think you would.
No, I thought it was a little bit strange when I first met you. The first thing that you said was thank you for the championship. And then you went on this diatribe about the 2011 Giants. And I was just like, okay, pump the brakes.
I mean, I'm sorry. I have tremendous adoration for what you did, and I'm not going to apologize for it. That was wonderful.
I know, Dave, but I mean, that's a little bit strong to lead like that, right?
Well. You remember it.
I do remember it. You're right. I do remember the first. That is the one benefit to being who Dave Rothenberg is. You will remember the first time you met him.
There you go.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.